Hey everyone, welcome to Made for Music. I am your host, Duncan Byerjohn. The reason I started this podcast was growing up, music was my ultimate passion, but I didn't know how to get started. So this podcast seeks to depict a comprehensive view of the music world, from the artistry to the business, so you can discover the resources available to you, and most importantly, the stories behind the people making things happen. If you dig what you hear, please rate and subscribe to Made for Music on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whatever your preferred podcast medium is. I truly appreciate that extra effort. And without further ado, here is the next episode of Made for Music. Welcome to Made for Music. Today's friend of the podcast hails from the Bay Area, but has taken his music career across the country, attending Berklee School of Music in Boston, a tenure in Nashville, and is now back in the greater San Francisco area. To my excitement, we had a lot in common, from our songwriting approach to our need to sneeze after walking into direct sunlight.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, it's great to know I am not alone. He blends blues rock vocals, insane guitar work, and pristine pop production into each one of his songs, which you could hear for yourself on his new single, Dead of Night. Without further ado, please welcome the man with the golden guitar, vocals, and fashion chops, Christopher Kenji.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, man, it's exciting stuff. One thing I'd love to hear from you, actually, is before really diving headfirst into the education side of things and, you know, going to college, do you mind walking me through just what music was like for you growing up? Was it always a passion of yours?
Yeah, sure. When I was a kid, I always loved to just make things, I guess. And I also, like I said, I like to just do kind of my own thing. I would always draw pictures. Like, I would spend my days just doodling, making little characters or whatever. I initially thought art was kind of my passion, and I kind of kept art and music sort of together a little bit until I got into like really high school, actually. But yeah, no, I went to a performing arts program in a public high school. I remember there, they actually had to make me choose between art and music. They're like, do you want to pursue this or pursue that? I mean, it wasn't like a huge thing. I mean, I was, at that point, I realized I was way more passionate about music. I mean, I kind of realized that before, but it made me make the decision. And yeah. I was like, you know, I love art and whatnot, but there's nothing like the feeling of performing in front of like an audience, you know, that I couldn't give up. But music, I started in third grade, so I was like 9 or 10. And my friends, we're having a little play date in third grade, if you will. And the mom came in. She's like, oh, Taylor has to go take his guitar lesson right now. And I was like, oh, cool. And I just remember sitting and watching, and I was just like, I want to do that.
Yeah.
And so I started writing kind of right when I started playing guitar. Like, I even remember my first few chords were A minor, G, D, and E. And I just made
a
song.
Same, yep.
Out of the variations of the chords, I feel like it wasn't like a big deal. I don't know, people think songwriting is this huge mystical thing, but I feel like people think of it as so much more daunting than it has to be. I think it's kind of just like, you know, you mess around and whatever sounds good to you, you know, is all that matters, I think.
100%.
I feel like it's,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. And I remember there was like a big moment when I was taking guitar lessons, because I just like playing all the time. I would play like 4 to 6 hours a day. It was literally like my best friends. Like, I would spend all day at home playing guitar instead of hanging out with people growing up, which was kind of a weird thing, I guess, not having friends.
Right.
Like, in middle school as much. Whatever. But I guess it paid off. I remember I was taking a guitar lesson one time, and my guitar teacher, he was like one of those people that was very stone faced. Like, he was like a nice guy, I guess. I could never really tell. He never smiled or anything. You know, he was like hard to read.
Right.
Like, I really, totally. You know, he was a great teacher. But he was talking about his guitar students. And I remember he was just like, yeah, well, you're probably my best guitar student I have. And he like said that, not even like, it wasn't even like a compliment. I feel like he was just so matter of fact about it. And I was just completely struck. I was like, wait, really? That was the first time I ever thought like oh, am I good at this? Like, I've just been taking lessons from you for a year. I just didn't know if I was like good or not. Like, I was literally like, after a year of playing it, that was a big sort of aha moment when I was a kid. When you
For
realize it's
sure.
something that, actually might be something for you.
Yeah. And you mentioned liking to mess around with various chords and not really actually liking being told like what to do. You like to do your own thing. Was that then hard to like take lessons from someone and then go to a place like Berkeley and have like structure where they're like, this is how the approach works, or this is like the science behind it all? Was it kind of weird to try and stretch your brain in that way?
Yeah, it kind of was. Well, I mean, my mindset has always kind of been pretty stable because, yeah, Berkeley, I feel like it's easy to fall into the trap of thinking everything they're telling you is how it is, you know? I took everything with a
Right.
grain of salt. Like, I think, a lot of people, they're like, okay, this is what good music is because this is what I'm being told, or, and a lot of times there's the Berkeley bias, you know? I think Berkeley's amazing and it really taught me so much. I think the way I thought of it is like they're giving me tools for my toolbox, you know, to use, and I can choose to use them or I don't have to, you know. It did force me to do a lot of soul searching. I remember getting to Berkeley and I had kind of started singing. I didn't really have the confidence. I didn't really sing in front of people that much. Like, did a few open mic nights, but I remember I got there and I was like, wow, I feel like I'm exactly the same as everyone else. I'm a guitar player who kind of sings but doesn't really, you know. I remember I was like, really, I had to do a lot of soul searching. I'm like, what do I offer? There's, you know, kids who, my prodigies from all over the world who, you know, have the time and dedication and means and technical ability to be, you know, way better than, you know, I was like, so what are my goals? Am I trying to be the best guitar player ever against everyone in the entire world? I was like, what really even made me get into music? Like, what made me be like, I should do this with my life? And I realized people like Bob Dylan or Kurt Cobain, they didn't necessarily have the best technical voices, but their music spoke to like generations of people and it's timeless. And that was like one of the things I really kind of realized. I was like, there's so many people here that could sing circles around me or play better than I'll ever be able to play. But there are very few times where I was like, damn, that was a really good song they wrote. Like, damn, that really moved me emotionally. And I was like, okay, this could be kind of my thing. And I feel like that sort of in my mind set me apart from everyone else. I had to find some way that I can have my own sort of thing, I guess.
Right. I think that's a great perspective to have too, because to your point, instead of being downtrodden by, oh my gosh, some of these are like the best players in the world and thinking that's what you had to be, really finding what got you into it. And so were you studying then? Were you like majoring in songwriting, or what were you focused on
Yeah, I
there
was
from like
actually
the
a
classes perspective?
songwriting major. Yep.
Nice. Okay. Do you listen to And the Writer Is by chance?
I listened to like an episode or two of it. Yeah, someone else showed it to me. I thought it was really cool. I listened to like two, there's one guy and one girl, and
Yeah.
but
It was
no,
just
it's
really
cool.
cool to, yeah, I thought it was cool because the guy who heads it up was a songwriting major at USC, and then he has some Berkeley folks that come through, and it's just really interesting to hear everybody's perspective from like, I think the people who have had success looked at their education in the same way you did, which was, okay, I'm getting these tools in these frameworks, but sometimes like breaking those or ignoring them is like what makes the song great or something like
Yeah.
that. Like just taking your own approach, but just building up the tools around you was like really important. But yeah, I guess before we dive into like some of the actual tunes that you've got, for those that may not be familiar, or for maybe folks that are looking to go explore to music school and exploring their options, do you mind providing some insight and just for the people in general, like what that process looks like? Because it's obviously very different applying to a music school than it is just say like a 4-year university where you've got the Common App.
Yeah.
Send it off and fingers crossed.
Yeah, no, I remember thinking the same thing when I was auditioning for Berklee. I remember I was like, what's gonna have them, accept me over someone else? And I remember I was gonna go into it and I was thinking, oh, what's a good song I should play on guitar? I was like, oh, I'll maybe play Little Wing or something. I actually was part of this 5-week summer program. That's actually where I auditioned
Oh,
and
very cool.
was accepted actually that week. I got to know the whole summer before my senior year, which is very fortunate.
Nice.
And because I was in the summer program, there's all these people auditioning also to get into Berklee. And I remember talking to five people, and they're like, yeah, I'm just going to play Little Wing. And I was like, oh,
Oh.
shit. Like, I thought I was like, oh, maybe that's a good song to play. And
Right.
I was like, I can't just go play Little Wing after I heard literally like five other guitarists say they're gonna play that. And
Yeah.
I was like, if I play a popular song guitar, then they're just gonna compare me to every single person they've already heard play that. So I was like, you know what? I'm just gonna write a song because they don't have anything to compare it to. It doesn't have to be like a good
Oh,
song. And
smart.
I was just a guitar principal there. The singing kind of was something came sort of later. Guitar was my forefront. But no, I wrote this song that had a chord melody at the beginning. They really eat that shit up. They love that whole chord melody thing. So I put a chord melody at the beginning and the ends, and that's the thing that tied it together as a song, because the rest was just like me showing off in every single way I possibly could. And I was like,
Nice.
this is great. I can just write into this audition whatever I want. And so I wrote like the chord melody, and then I had a bunch of different sections. I had this funky guitar section and this like kind of finger picking stuff, and then I did this Spanish flamenco technique thing that I learned, and they hadn't seen that before, so they thought that was really cool.
Oh,
I
nice.
think the and so I just kind of made this song in quotation marks. Whatever has kind of gotten me success in life, I feel like it's never the thing I think. It's never like, oh, I'm gonna do it the exact same way that everyone else does. I feel like always having an edge or always doing something different is so much easier way into doing whatever you want to do. Like even for the fashion world, I never thought I would ever be a model, like a male model in my entire life, like doing runway and stuff. But the thing is, like for that too, I know, sorry, I'm getting off topic. But like,
No, that was my next question was, so how did you diverge into
I mean, that's a whole story. But yeah, no, the
that?
cool thing about the modeling industry, in the music world, everyone's a music guy. Like, you're not anything different. But in the modeling
Right.
world, in the fashion world, they still have like all these huge events. You know, it's the entertainment industry as well, and they need live music and. I'm the music guy to everyone. They're like, we know
Yeah.
Chris, he's an artist and he plays his own live music, and everyone comes to me. It's crazy. I'm like, wow.
That's dope.
If you like, there's so many more options besides me, but but I'm the person I guess they know. And so for the audition, just try to find what sets you apart and what makes you special, especially in your audition piece, because they'll always have an audition piece to any music school. Or even if it's someone else's song, try to add some of your own personality to it or something that'll be memorable to them, because they hear so many auditions. They hear like so many people. Just kind of finding your edge, I guess that's my biggest thing I would say.
For sure. And it seems like you really carried that through not only in the audition process, but then, like you were saying, while your time there, with your peers and such, have you seen that kind of work for folks as well? I know you mentioned some of your classmates have gone on and had really successful, I mean, of course, before this like COVID stuff, really successful like touring careers and stuff. So I guess obviously without like names or anything like that, but what did you find from, you've got your class, right? How did you find those that really excelled? What were they doing that was different or gave them that edge that after graduation really helped propel them forward?
I think just real undeniable good content. Like, I feel like the biggest way I mean, it sounds simple, but the two kind of big people I know, I mean, I guess I can name drop.
Go for it.
I did it. They're just people I happen to know. Mac Ayers. He's like an R&B kind of soul artist. He's super, super cool. He's, you know, had a sold out tour like all around like the US, and he has like 2 million monthly Spotify listeners, I think. But Sasha Sloan also went to my school. I didn't really know her. Like I would see her around. I can't pretend like I knew her. And she, nice. I remember everyone else was always talking about her too. And both of them at the time, I guess Spotify wasn't as big a thing. They both kind of made splashes through SoundCloud, actually. Yeah, the thing is they're both like undeniably good. And they both also were always putting out music, working hard. They had drive. Anytime there's a Berklee open mic night, they would play it. And I would play it too and just like cower in. Like, I would be like, please don't make me go after like either of them. But yeah, I think biggest thing in anything you're trying to do, I think, is the actual product.
What has the journey looked like since graduating? Because you've been doing a lot of the modeling stuff, which you're still doing. You're releasing songs. So how are you balancing it all, I guess? Because it seems like you're really active now on both fronts, and that's a lot to juggle.
It's a matter of sacrificing and finding the things that are important to you. I've just kind of said, screw it, try and do both, you know? So I moved to Nashville, Tennessee for a year. I made an album. It was sort of a big learning thing for me. I haven't really promoted it since then. That it taught me so much. I worked with these amazing producers, engineers, and just kind of got a feel for how the whole process works, what it's like to make, you know, an album, what it's like to try to promote it in some way. That was like my masterpiece that I worked on for like 3 years. It was part of while I was doing Berklee and other stuff. But now I think of it as just kind of something that I learned a lot from. And I moved back to the Bay Area, San Francisco, where I'm from, living here now again. And from there, the modeling thing was just super, super random.
Did you find that impacted the way that you approached music by any chance? Obviously, there's more to juggle, but just having that other artistic outlet.
Oh, I think definitely. Nowadays, especially, it's not just your music. It's about you and your whole, like everything, you know? Music's obviously the most important part. It should be, at least. It should be the most important part. But I think that it's kind of now a full package because people don't go to, you know, the store to buy an album anymore. You have an Instagram, you have Facebook, you have, you know, you have your whole brand. So I think it's really helped with all the aesthetic stuff, like knowing photographers, getting really just awesome content and knowing the best people to do it, knowing, you know, stylists, fashion designers, videographers for music videos, for video content. It also made me think about myself in a marketing way, you know, the style and the aesthetic of the things I do that I want to use to complement my music. You know, I think in a perfect world, we'd all just worry about the music, you know, it wouldn't be about all this other stuff. It would be so simple, but because it's not, you know, it was a really good thing that it made me sort of look into myself, try to, yeah, brand myself because it is a brand, you know, your band too. You have a certain aesthetic, a certain demographic of people that like your music. Also just the modeling world, you're so connected with the entertainment industry, like runway shows, fashion events, other, you know, camera video related things, for lack of a better word. Those connections are just as valuable as, you know, music connections. And so I think that inadvertently, it ended up helping me out a lot more doing both modeling and music than it ever did hurt me. You know, there's times where I don't have time for certain things and certain things, you know, get in the way. But I think overall, it's helped me so incredibly much being part of both worlds.
Definitely. And was that a big reason that you did the brand shift from your original project to the Christopher Kenji project?
Yeah, no, definitely. like I said, the other project was, to me now, I see it as like a learning experience. Maybe some stuff I want to sort of bring back at a later date. I kind of wanted to separate myself. And that was kind of the Christopher Kenji when I sort of reestablished myself. I think that kind of was the start of me thinking like, okay, I need to market myself. I need to brand myself. I also wanted to separate myself from my old stuff because I didn't want to delete it. I didn't want to just take the album off Spotify. You know, I thought about it, and even when people pronounce my real last name, Gleckman, I notice when I say, yeah, Chris Gleckman, people are like, oh, like, even though it's not like necessarily a hard name, I knew that I had to have something sort of catchy also. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to change my name. And Kenji is my Japanese middle name, being a quarter Japanese. And I thought that was a cool thing to highlight. So Christopher Kenji, I feel like every time I've said it to anyone, it's been no problem. They remember it. It sticks in their head more. So yeah, it was definitely something I thought about.
And then do you mind, I guess, walking me through what it was like then creating music for this project? And part two to that question is, what inspired you to lead with the Ain't No Sunshine cover as like the first release under the new moniker?
I did a lot of work before with other people sort of relying on, like, I never even wanted to produce my own music. That was never something I wanted to worry about. I wanted to be able to just make music and then go and have it be recorded and come back sounding perfect and release it. Back in the day, I didn't have the confidence to produce myself, you know, but I'm very particular about the way I want my music to sound. Like, when you have your vision, you know, in your head, it needs to be perfect. Otherwise, it's kind of, you'll never be happy listening to it. If you release something that it didn't exactly hit the mark, every time you listen to it, instead of, you know, being proud of it, you're going to hear all the mistakes in it. Yep. And so that's the way I think. It needs to be perfect before I release anything, you know. I feel like it took me a long time to realize I was totally able to produce my own stuff. I just kind of, for a long time, assumed that they have better equipment or they have more years of experience doing this. They probably know better. They probably can hear things that I can't hear. And then at a certain point, I just realized that working with a lot of people, sometimes your visions are different and, you know, there's kind of a disconnect a little bit. Or even when there is like a good connection, sometimes they, you know, can't read your mind. I would oftentimes get my music back not the way I wanted it at all. And, you know, be people talking about all this crazy stuff I ran through, like vintage tape machines and, you know, recorded on analog, use all these fancy plugins and stuff. But then I'll get it back and I'll be like, I could have made this sound better with my limited equipment, you know. As any musician, that something you go through, there's that sort of phenomenon where you're like, oh man, this didn't come out the way I was expecting it to. And I have worked with a lot of amazing people, so that's not at all saying anything about them. It was funny because quarantine gave me that time, but I don't think I would have necessarily to focus so much. I feel like I haven't slowed down this whole year, even though technically I didn't leave my house for a good month or two. And then it was very sparse, you know, how everyone was. But for me, every single day, I'd spend like 10 hours. I was like, all right, I'm going to learn how to do this myself. So Ain't No Sunshine. It started off me just kind of messing around on Pro Tools. And then it just kind of happened really organically. I thought it would be cool to release a cover song, a song that everyone already likes. Mm. It makes that much easier. People already know they like the original song. They're more inclined to listen to it, first of all, and also like your song because they already like it. I recorded a bunch of stuff and I was like, you know what? This might be a good just opening song just because, I don't know, it just felt right. I didn't think too much.
That's good, though. I just go with your gut sometimes, and what feels good pays off a lot of the time.
Yeah, I kind of been following that. I follow that with modeling. Like I said, I never thought I would do it. But then once it just kind of kept working out and working out, I was like, you know what? I don't know why it's working out. I don't know how or why, but I'm not going to question it. I'll just let it see where it takes me. For Ain't No Sunshine, I feel like each song is a completely different set of problems, you know? It's like you can't apply the same formula to every song. It would be so easy if you could. But for Dead of Night,
it took so much longer, and it was so much more challenging to make that song than Ain't No Sunshine. It's kind of crazy, because if you listen to them, you wouldn't know that it took so much more effort for Dead of Night. But Ain't No Sunshine, it was surprisingly seamless. I recorded it all. That was one of the fastest songs I feel like I made. I was just feeling everything. The things I threw at it kind of just worked out. You know, it did take some trial and error for throwing in different instruments and different arrangements. But I finished it pretty quickly. And I was like, you know what? I have this song done. Might as well release it.
Is that the one that Mark really wanted you to release? Or is there a different song? Okay, that was it. Right on. Because me and him went on a run like a month or two back. And I remember, or I guess it would have been longer because it was before the song came out. And I remember him being like, actually, you know what? It was when you released Ain't No Sunshine. He's like, he's got another song that I really want him to release that I've been really pushing for. And so he was a huge fan, obviously. Right. And was, I know that he was very excited. And it's incredible. So I totally understand why, but it was very cool. But anyway, sorry I jumped in there.
Don't be sorry at all. Yeah, I love Mark. It's funny because I showed him that song when he came back home. He was always pushing for that song. He's like, when are you gonna release it? When are you gonna release it? And I remember he bugged me one time online. I think right around the time I released Ain't No Sunshine, he was like, when are you gonna release this? Because I kind of put it on the back burner for a second. I actually recorded the vocals to it last year, 2019.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember. That's
and I originally wanted it to come out Halloween of last year, which is crazy.
Dang,
because it's almost Halloween this year now. and so I kind of 90% finished it, and then I put it on the back burner. And Mark reminded me. Actually, which is funny, I credit him for this. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to go rekindle that old flame. And I went in, scrapped all the stuff I didn't do as well back then and re-recorded it. But the vocal take, I kept. So Ain't No Sunshine vocals were recorded probably 9 months after the vocals for Dead of Night were recorded. But I released that song a few months before Dead of Night. It's weird how stuff works out like that.
Being received super well. I mean, what, it got released at the point of recording here? It's only been out like what, a couple weeks? Yeah. And it's already got like a couple thousand streams. Like the monthly listener counts keeps climbing, so it's really cool to see, man.
Thank you, man. Yeah, I've been focusing a lot of work on marketing and just getting into that whole world. Because the worst feeling in the world is spending so much time on music, like that album I made back 2 years ago. I was super proud of at the time. A week afterward, I was like, okay, it was old news now. And I was like, wow.
I was going to say, do you mind walking me through what some of that stuff is that really stood out to you when your research that you found has helped keep some momentum rolling?
Yeah. I found that, first of all, working your own audience that you already have, sort of starting there and sort of getting the most you can out of the people that already like your music. They're already like ready to listen to your music. They're the biggest fans that I have right now are, you know, my core group of people that I know personally. So those are my strongest fans. A lot of it was persistence, just kept being like, I have a song coming out. Putting it on all my socials. And then when a few people shared it, I reshared that going and kept making content. And at first you feel like you're being annoying, but to people, whether it is annoying or not, they need to be reminded so many times before they actually take action, before it's actually on their mind. So working my own social media, making content, you know, putting out promo shots for the song, and then releasing the song, making like a little video sort of clip for it. And then, so working as much you can with your own audience is the kind of first part. And then after that, sort of getting it to new listeners, obviously. And for that, I tried pitching my songs to playlists, and I've gotten them on quite a few playlists now, which have really helped my listeners, the amount of ears on my song. Like, it's helped tremendously. But the thing that I found is interesting is that people don't necessarily, even if they're listening to your song on a playlist, they don't necessarily go to your page check out your other stuff, or even honestly know who you are. Like, people listen to a playlist all the time. They have it in the background if they're at the gym, if they're zoning out, or just even if they are just straight listening to music, a lot of the time they won't go and check out your other page. They might like that one song. They might even save that song, but that doesn't build an actual fan base, you know? And this is something I'm still struggling with, trying to get more actual fans, which I have been getting more, but it's kind of a hard thing to crack. And so some people do go follow you on Spotify. But for the most part, yeah, I've been trying to crack Facebook ads and learning how to use Facebook Ad Manager, because Facebook owns Instagram, running ads through Facebook, through Instagram. And it's crazy because Facebook knows so much about us. Like, it knows so much.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. Scary,
but it's great for advertising. Because you can, you know, target, find the specific targets, you know, even people that this person listens to Spotify and they like, you know, My Chemical Romance, but they also like some random indie artists like from Norway.
You can do some weird crossovers.
Yeah. And finding those people and those small targets, or even just random interests, like, you know, they're into male fashion modeling or something. I haven't really tested that. But so using that and sort of which is great, but it's also really, really complicated. And this has taken me a lot of time to figure out how to optimize my ads, how to get it to the right people. And I'm still honestly figuring that out right now. I've tried some services. Right now I'm using ToneDen, which is a
not familiar.
It basically just goes into your Facebook Ads Manager and sort of takes your content and takes your ads and finds out, using their algorithms, how to you know, optimize your ads to get the cheapest cost per conversion. Basically, it does a better job advertising than most people like me, and like 90% of people like me. Yeah. So I don't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
I mean, so I do go in and change some things here and there, but I've only been doing it for a few days. It has gotten me some results. I'm going to continue to figure that out. I'm still kind of on the figuring out end of that, but it has been cool. I have been seeing, you know, people who have seen my ads from different countries around the world who message me, you know, saying that I found your music, I really like it. And that's the best feeling in the world, you know. Like, I've never been to like India. But having people that really care about my music from India and knowing that I've made some kind of effect on them is a crazy feeling. It's just, you know, I've had a lot of listeners in South America. It's really fascinating to me, too, I think, once you start marketing and sort of starting to get your music out there, seeing which demographics of people are interested in your music. And it's just really cool. So I'm still figuring it out. I have my goal in mind where I want to be. But right now it's taking a lot of problem solving to get there. And I think just the more and more I push it, the more and more I release. And the other thing is just, I need to keep continuing to release new singles, because there's only so much mileage you can get out of two songs. So I just heard this statistic. I was just watching a video on it on YouTube right before I talked to you, actually, saying that to really break an artist, apparently they need 26 songs.
Interesting.
To really break them.
I'm wondering what that, I wonder if that's like a... how recent, because that totally makes sense from like a longevity. Like, if you look at labels back in like the 70s to 90s, right? There's the debut record, and in the second album was people, you know, it's like if you have the sophomore slump, you're probably getting dropped. If you can have a great second album, like, you're on your way kind of thing. So that's really interesting. Yeah. So that makes sense if you have like two 12 to 14 track albums with maybe, you know, soundtrack singles or something. That's really fascinating. And even, but that's like even now for artists in this singles age, it's still looking like 24 songs kind of thing, like our 26.
And a good body of music, because like being on Spotify or Apple Music or something, you can't really put on an artist's song when you're eating dinner, or an artist page when you're eating dinner, if they only have two songs, unless you want to listen to those two songs over and over and over and over again.
Right.
And so, if you know, people, to keep people coming back, I feel like you need a big body of work so that they don't get tired, because new listeners, they forget about you if you only have two songs. If they find a bunch of your songs, and that's so many more songs that they could put on their own playlists.
And there's certainly something to be said for having a full catalog like that to where people get to know your identity. I think albums are a great way to get to know artists. Singles are a great way to be introduced. So I know when I hear a song that I fall in love with, you talked about conversion and whatnot, and I'm definitely guilty of, I'll listen a lot, hear a lot of new stuff, but I don't really go and check out an artist unless a song blows my mind. So it's like there's that strong single as the hook, but then I definitely will dive into an album. So it's a great point you bring up. If you get hooked by a single and there's only one other single or something like that, or five songs, you can't just like really sit with that artist and hear the whole story. You've got like, yeah, the two songs.
Exactly.
Which is where I do try to follow, because where that comes into play, though, is like, to your point, it's hard to get those conversions, and following is so key in such a new concept with like DIY musicians, because how do we get people to go, you know what, when as this catalog grows, I want to be a part of it.
Exactly. And people to stick around for the long haul. It's about that kind of loyalty, you know, that brand loyalty, like any product needs, you know.
For sure. And speaking of which, for those that are listening, how can folks find you? Where can they get Dead of Night? And I guess what do you have coming down the pipe folks can get excited about?
Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube Music, Google Play, all of those, iTunes. You can find me. It's just Christopher Kenji. And so I'm on Instagram too, Christopher Kenji, Facebook, Christopher Kenji Official. And my new song is called One Way Mirror. I'm super excited about that one. And I've been making a behind the scenes video of how I make the song, because I thought it'd be cool for people to see what the process is actually like and how I go about doing it. So I filmed a day of recording when I tracked all the guitars at my friend's studio. And I just recorded some of me doing vocals, me working on the song a little bit more. I'm going to go, when I schedule my album artwork shoot to shoot the single cover, I'm going to do some behind the scenes for that and try to talk about what it's like to make this song. I think it'd be a cool thing for people to see, and, you know, for people on YouTube. I haven't really put anything out on YouTube, really. So I think it'd be a cool thing to sort of make a YouTube channel and cross-pollinate my music from there. And maybe people, if they find the video helpful, things they can do in their own production, or if they get ideas, you know, giving value to maybe someone out there. If they do like what I do, maybe they'll be inclined to check out my music too, you know. So I'm excited about that too.
Yeah, I guess before we get ready to wrap up here, I would like to ask folks, and you've kind of answered this throughout, but just the big overarching question, right, is like, why do you make music?
I think I just want to bring people together, you know. I think the world's so divided, especially right now, I feel like in 2020. Like, the beautiful thing about music is that you get people together from all different walks of life, all different political standings, all different, you know, whatever. It's like all that doesn't matter for a night. Everyone comes to your show, your concert, and just enjoys what you have to say and the music that you make. I think that's something that's really powerful to me. And, you know, everyone connects to music. It's like, for some people, they watch sports, other people don't. Or for some people, you know, they're selective about what they do like, but everyone likes music. That's a universal thing. I don't know why. It's crazy. If you think about it, it's just sounds with your ears. just like listening to sounds that make us happy, but right. I mean, obviously it's much deeper than that. But like, I'd rather have one person that really, really, really connects with my music and gets something out of it for themselves. Like, if it makes their day better, makes them feel less alone. I care way more about that than making music that like a million people kind of like, but also don't give that much of a shit about, you know? I feel like that's the thing for me. It's all about connecting with people. And it's so much bigger than just me too, you know? And sometimes when you write a song, I feel like you don't even feel like you wrote it. Like, I feel like it comes through you sometimes. If I sit down and I'm like, okay, I'm going to write a song now, when it doesn't come to me, when I try to force it, sometimes I'll be like, man, how did I ever write any of the songs I wrote before? Like, I feel like I can't even do this. But, you know, it's one of those things that it like comes through you. And I feel like it is something that's bigger than you. And you're kind of like the vessel for it. And it's like nothing else in the world. And that's what keeps me doing it. And they'll forever keep me doing it.
For sure. That's awesome. That was beautiful. I guess before we tell everyone where they can get stuff, I have a little segment for you. It's just rapid fire. I'm going to ask you some preferences in kind of an either or scenario. Sure. And you just off the cuff, let me know your answer. You ready?
Yeah, go for it.
All right. So your current loop pedal or Sony's super duper music looper pedal? Or music looper, not pedal.
I would say probably my pedal has more.
Yeah. When you sent me that you were using Sony's super duper music looper, the title itself, like the fact that that is the title, was amazing to me. And the whole world needs to know about it.
I think
it.
They need to. That was like a pre GarageBand. I remember that was like
right
before GarageBand was even a thing. I remember there's like so few options, at least the version I had.
That's
it was
hilarious.
Like, it was like you have these loops and you could put them together.
Yeah.
And they're setting to actually record, but I mean, it was not.
Right.
But I used to do that all the time. I remember when I was even like a kid, I would just. I would always be making songs out of the loops.
Yeah. The form of music making production.
Yeah. A great way to start getting a feel for that kind of stuff, though. Like, oh, here's like a solid finished foundation that I can start working.
Yeah, and
over.
Like what things go together. Yeah. I never really thought about it. Like, I literally didn't think about that until today. Like, I probably haven't said the word super duper music looper in 10 full years. I kid you not.
Yeah, that's also just a very like early to late 2000s yeah. product title.
It very much is.
All right, next one: blues or flamenco guitar?
I would say blues. Like, I love Spanish guitar, mm-hmm. and I think it's amazing. But I feel like blues speaks more to what I make. It's more kind of mm-hmm. Compatible with my music. I feel like flamenco is like a really cool color. Like mm-hmm. different finger techniques and stuff is really cool to add to. Like, I've used flamenco triplet strumming technique for funky guitar for kind of like rock, and certain moments are like right. Is like cool flavors to add in. But yeah, I would say blues mm-hmm. overarching speaks to me on a deeper level.
For sure. Have you heard the song Anastasia by Slash with Miles Kennedy?
That sounds really familiar. I know Slash and Miles.
I'll send it to you after.
Yeah.
There's he was like studying flamenco guitar, and he like wrote the intro to the song that way. And then Miles Kennedy has a song "Cry of Achilles" with Alter Bridge, where stemming out of that, he was like, "Oh, that's a really cool intro style." And then of course, it's not like pure flamenco, but I think the average listener would assume it is. But it's really
that's
fun.
Super cool. Yeah. No, I definitely have to check that out. I had no idea.
Yeah. I'll shoot them over to you. It's really great atmosphere for the song, and then both songs like kick into high gear. But it's a really great intro, if you will.
Yeah.
But, Radiohead or Pink Floyd?
They're like so different. I'm trying to think.
Yep.
I feel like Pink Floyd. Yeah, that's a hard question. I feel like everyone has a Radiohead phase, kind of like once you listen
yeah
to it.
That's real.
I mean, they're just on so many levels, like especially for their production now, listen to it, and mm-hmm. Their abstract kind of I feel like Radiohead brings things that I like have never heard before, kind of in a very like mm-hmm. digestible way, which is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they're that weird band yeah. that everybody likes, and they feel like all super cool for liking them, you know. They feel like
right.
super interesting,
even though they're like massive now.
Yeah.
But somehow they've still maintained that like artistic edge to where it's not mainstream or selling out. It's just they happen to get huge.
Yeah. No, I feel like they're really like geniuses. Like, it's very rare that someone or an artist can like translate such complex stuff. And at the same time, when you break it down, a lot of the stuff is simple. It's just decorated with really crazy shit. But, I think they're really cool. But I think Pink Floyd, I grew up on Pink Floyd more. So they'll always have a special place in my heart. And I would have to say Pink Floyd, I think. Pink Floyd kind of just...
Right on.
Their lyrics and everything about them, I feel like... That's just so much of who I am, and kind of like the anthem of my childhood, which definitely influenced my songwriting. So yeah, I would say Pink Floyd.
Sweet. Grizzly Bear or Tame Impala?
I would say Grizzly Bear.
I feel like I need to explore Tame Impala more. Like, I really, everything from their music videos, which are beautiful and super trippy and cool, to, like, their music, I feel like I need to explore more. But I think Grizzly Bear, that's, like, another band that I also probably need to explore more. But, like, their Yellow House album, I would just listen to that front and back every single day, taking the bus home from school. They're super, super talented and do really cool things, similar to Radiohead, especially, like, their drummer. He's, like, one of the most interesting, creative drummers I think I've ever heard.
Oh, I'll have to go dive into them then.
Yeah, you should check out their Yellow House album.
I've only listened to them, like, in passing. Okay.
And also their Shields album I really like. Yeah, they're just, like, a really cool band.
I'm noting that right now. And then last one, a switch up a little bit to songwriters. Elliot Smith or Jason Isbell?
They're also both different. I feel like Jason Isbell is, he's, like, more, I guess, impressive as a songwriter, kind of. Like, he has his way with poetry and his lyrics and metaphors and all that is kind of more impressive, I guess. Like, it's inspiring. When I listen to his songs, I'm like, wow, that is a very well-crafted song. Like, that is really cool. And obviously that translates very much emotionally to me. But but I feel like there's just something about the simplicity of Elliot Smith's music that kind of intrigues me a little bit more. And he was a very depressed guy. I mean, rest in peace. I'm not sure if that has to do with the songwriting or just, like, him as a person, but there's just something about his music that was just so, like, honest and dark and real, but also at the same time, not that Jason Isbell at all is, but I feel like he wasn't hiding behind any sort of gimmicks or flashiness. I feel like it's just very honest. And I think that's one of the things I value the most in music is just, like, honest songs.
I'm super excited for what's to come, man. I hope you're hanging in there all right. Things considered with this this remote world we're kind of in right now, but it's always awesome talking to you.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. Really, this has been such a pleasure for me. Letting me talk about myself for an hour. It's funny, it feels weird. I'm not used to it.
It is a weird sensation, but selfishly it's great for me because I get to hear all people's stories and stuff and in a medium that normally I wouldn't get the opportunity to just take an hour out of the day. So I appreciate you sharing your story, man. It's really, really cool.
That's very selfless of you, and it's a really cool opportunity that I feel lucky to be a part of, so thank you.
Well, yeah, man, again, really appreciate it, and as things come live, get me those links and I'll be sure to get them up on both the podcast site and my personal channels. And again, really just appreciate you coming on here and sharing your story, and super stoked for what the next year brings for us, the fans, because I know we're going to be getting new music, and then hopefully when all this stuff clears up, we'll be able to see you live as well.
Yeah, well, likewise for you too, you know. I look forward to hearing everything that you guys are going to be doing too.
Right on. I appreciate that, man. Have a good one and stay healthy.
Yeah, you too. Thank you so much, Duncan.
Dreams and broken memories, I resign, I resign. You thought I'd live and die and never catch you lying, blue in the face. Well, it ain't no fate, I know. In the dead of night, you're still aware. Oh yeah. And in the confines of your head, every word I said makes you choke. Oh, ain't that so? Baby, how does it feel to know you broke your sorry heart all on your own? All on your own, yeah. 'Cause in the dead of night,
was Dead of Night by Christopher Kenji. I want to thank him so much again for coming on Made for Music. Be sure to give him a follow on social media at Christopher Kenji. Christopher is C-H-R-I-S-T-O-P-H-E-R and Kenji is K-E-N-J-I. I really dig what he's doing, and he's got some more tunes in the works, so stay tuned. And if you dig what you hear, please be sure to rate and subscribe to Made for Music on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whatever your preferred podcast medium is. Truly appreciate that extra effort, and I will see y'all next time.